Yesterday was a no input day, and before that we were exploring this development of bodhicitta practice to draw out some of the essentials that we need if we're going to live a life based around bodhicitta. So we skipped over the blue sky, and then there was, well, first off, we need a refuge. We need those resources, those deep resources, those qualities to draw on. Without those, things won't work. And then we need what the text calls a powerful feeling of empathy. And you remember there were those reflections. The first two are more about just making us aware of just how deeply connected we are with one another. It's a bit like when you do the six element practice, if you do the six element practice, you reflect on just how interconnected we are with the elements, how we've really taken in so much, and we're exchanging all the time with the elements. Well, similarly, we're exchanging all the time with other beings. We're exchanging from the air we breathe to all kinds of influences, social influences, cultural influences, psychological, emotional influences, and then all kinds of practical things. So in all kinds of ways, you know, just in order to go to sleep at night and have a bed to sleep on, we need that connection with other beings. So the first two are showing us that particularly, that and aiming to give us a sense of real solidarity, yeah? Even though other people are different from us in some ways. You know, in some ways, each of us is unique. We're an unrepeatable offer. In other ways, we're just the same, in as much as we're all very much in the same position. We're all in the same existential situation. And the latter reflections invite us to reflect on the fact that we're not in a good existential situation. So the these are designed to give us a sense of empathy. Which is designed to bring about compassion. And those are two separate ways of experiencing. And they go together, but they need to be, they need to be working in concert. So if you just have the empathy with all the suffering in the world, then you end up overwhelmed in about 0.3 of a second. Yeah. So we need the compassion, and we also need this sense of refuge and that there's something to be done about it. So the fourth point is the actual practice, is what we do about it. So for a complete practice, it's like we need all four noble truths. So we need the awareness of suffering and its causes. But we also need the conviction that there's an answer, that there's a way out, and we need the methods that will take us there. And it's really important that we keep in our practice looking to see whether we've got the complete set of the Four Noble Truths, because if we've only got the first two, or the first one, then life, you know, well, if there were only the first two, then living life under the duvet or with one's head in the sand would be a very good idea. Yeah? It's because there is a way out and there are methods that we can use to help ourselves to freedom and other people to freedom, that it's worth contemplating the first two. But it is very easy to end up in the modern world contemplating the first two, because that's often being thrust at us in all sorts of ways, you know, from all the interconnections that we have now, all the media showing us the latest disaster in the world, the latest lot of, you know, suffering, the latest famine, the latest terrorist outrage, and so on. Plus, you know, all that we hear about from our friends and all that we hear about from being part of a big order and a movement that's got thousands of people involved in it. All the time we're going to be hearing about people who are sick, people who are ill, people who are dead. So if that just takes centre stage too much, at a certain point we will just close down. So that needs to be balanced with keeping very alive in our life examples and reminders of freedom and awakening and a sense of what we can do that helps us and what we can share with others that will help them to lead us in that direction. It is, of course, possible that you focus so much on three and four that you either do the spiritual bypassing thing about your own dukkha, or you just disappear into your own practice and you don't take on the first two truths that you're surrounded by with everyone else. Yeah. So it's very simple, but it's really helpful just to keep thinking in those terms. Yeah. Have I got all those four? Have I got my four noble truths together? Yeah. If you get those in a line, then you hit the jackpot. Yeah. My terrible associative mind. What can be done? Which also, so in terms of the third truth of the cessation of suffering, that's where the refuge in some form is showing us, yeah, look, it's possible to be out of this. So I find it really helpful just reading the lives and contemplating, you know, people who have really made, you know, really become realized, people who've really gone a long way down the path. I find that just keeps that in my awareness and keeps me inspired. So yeah, we need that empathy and that compassion which moves us. We need the refuge which stops us from being moved and then just overwhelmed and not being able to do anything. And then we need a method that works for us, that we have confidence in. When we got those things in place, then practice is really fulfilling. So it's, in a way, you can use the four truths just as a kind of checklist, you know. So am I in touch with the dukkha in the world, in myself, as motivation and to open my heart? Do I see that what's the real cause of dukkha, the fundamental cause? I mean, all kinds of causes, and we help wherever we can. Yeah, am I in touch with, am I keeping in touch with something which inspires me, which is the answer, the way out? Yeah. Whether that's, yeah, reading the lives of people who've done that, or however we do it for us, or whether it's visualizing the Buddha or being in touch with our Yidam. However, yeah, that needs to be there. And then we need confidence in our practice that it's taking us in that direction. Because otherwise we'll stop practicing, or we'll just do it in a kind of going through the motions. Well, I know this isn't really going to work, but, you know, look, I'm trying terribly hard sort of way of practicing, which doesn't do it. And if we feel like we're not sure whether our practice is doing the job, then we really need to have someone that we can talk to, who we have confidence in, that can help us. Not that we just keep on and on kind of questioning and looking, if you see what I mean. It's like Bhante has this thing about, you know, if you have a plant, you don't keep pulling it up to see how the roots are doing. You know, you give it a chance, you give it the conditions, and then you wait a while and see how it's doing. And I suppose the other factor that I haven't quite brought out in what I'm saying here is that that resolve, yeah, that the compassion kind of is expressed as, we're in touch with it as a heart wish, and that heart wish becomes a resolve that we're going to, you know, we're not just going to contemplate, oh, life is suffering, you know, but there are these wonderful Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, you know, we're actually going to do something about it. You know, we're committing ourselves to the path for ourselves and for others. So that's the third point here. And what practice you use can be, you know, any Dharma method that's effective. In terms of bodhicitta, there's all the four immeasurables, the Brahma-viharas. There's sadhana, which is essentially a practice of bodhicitta, development of wisdom and compassion. And the texts that these kind of practices come from, they often talk about two ways of developing bodhicitta. One is contemplating, well, it's like the bit of this, which is the traditional reflections that during beginningless cycles of rebirth, all beings will have been one's father and mother many times and will have cared for one with the kindness of a mother and father. So you contemplate that, if that works for you. If it does, it's very powerful, because you feel like, oh, I really am, you know, these strangers that I've just met, well, they're strangers in this life, but actually we've had all sorts of associations before. And more than that, you know, they've cared for me over lifetimes. And so it can be very strong. But for most Westerners, that sense of rebirth, if it's there at all, isn't strong enough to sustain that kind of practice, I think, usually. As I say, if it does for you, well, great, you know, go for it. So in some Buddhist circles in the East, you know, that really does work. Yes, a lot of Tibetans have that kind of view. But yes, you'd have to be quite deeply, you know, emotionally behind it, not just sort of believe it as an idea for it to work. Just recently, I was reading an unpublished memoir by Shenpen Hukum, and she tells some nice stories in it, and it's quite inspiring too, because she was one of the very early generation of young people who were inspired by the first Tibetan lamas coming to the West. So she was inspired by meeting Chogyam Trungpa to go off to India and practice in the very early days of things, when Tibetans didn't really know what to do with Westerners or weren't even sure whether they could practice, so all kinds of difficulties and living in very basic conditions. Anyway, one of her early teachers was called Karma Tinley Rinpoche, and he was, he was very kind to her, and he found all sorts of ways of teaching her which really kind of brought her up against herself. But she was very devoted to him, and she was practicing, you know, really just taking on, you know, whatever he asked her to do, she'd just do it. So one day she was staying near him, and one of the local villagers, a woman, sort of came up looking for Karma Tinley, saying that where the nun, there were some Tibetan nuns staying in the village, and in the house where they were, there was a room which was used by some children, and there was a snake in there. And the villagers were gathering, and they were going to kill the snake. And so she wanted Karma Tinley to do something about it. So Shenpen said, "Oh, okay, I'll go and see him, and I'll tell him what's going on." So she went to see him, and she explained. And at that stage, she didn't speak Tibetan, and his English was a bit ropey, but they sort of managed to communicate. So she was expecting him to dash off and do something about the situation. But he said, "You must go." And she said, "Me? Well, I wouldn't know what to do, and you know, I've got no experience of this." He said, "You must go. This snake is your mother. They're going to kill your mother. You must go." And Shenpen thought, what? And she said, "Well, I wouldn't know, you know, what would I do with the snake?" And he said, you get a stick and a box, and you take box and you push snake with stick into box. It's your mother. Go. Shenpen's getting more and more desperate. And she says, "Well, what if I can't get the snake into the box? What if I sort of poke at it and it kind of goes off somewhere and bites somebody?" So he says, all right, not box, sack. You get sack and stick. You push snake into sack. So that point, Shenpen, there's a mixture of sort of not liking snakes, probably. Not having any clue of really, you know, whether this is going to work with a stick and a sack. Plus also the sort of social embarrassment of kind of going down there, and there are going to be all these villagers and these Tibetan nuns, and she's supposed to sort of walk in like some sort of 19th century Victorian lady and take control of the situation and get them to bring her a sack and a stick. And so she's kind of, she just can't do it. And Carmen Tinley says, these Tibetan nuns, I know what they're like. Yeah. They'll be all, you know, concerned for snake. They lie. They just want it killed. They stand to mantra. Oh. This snake, your mother, you must go! And at that point, Shenpen reaches one of those points which I remember reaching a few times with Bante, where, you know, there you are, you're sort of devoted to your teacher, you're saying you'll do whatever they want, and at this point you know that you're just not going to. And you are, your ego is completely up against the wall, and something desperate just comes out of you, and you just can't do it. So Shenpen says, why don't you go? The snake's your mother too. Carmen Tinley says, I can't go. She says, why not? He says, I'm afraid. You must go. Your mother is going to be killed. So eventually, Shenpen goes down to the village, and there are a little group of Tibetan nuns who are all very piously chanting, and looking to see what's going on. And this group of villagers discussing what to do, and Shenpen sort of can't, she just feels, I can't be involved in this. So she goes off. Later she hears that the villagers did kill the snake. She also hears that they do have ways of taking snakes away, and they know how to do it, but they just hadn't done it on that occasion. So she does feel badly. But anyway, yeah, so practicing like that, if it works for us, great. But if it doesn't, we may just sort of end up a bit kind of more like in that sort of Shenpen position where we're sort of taking something on but not really kind of getting behind it. So the other way of working is that you practice exchanging self and others, as it's called, where you see that what causes you suffering is that kind of constant self-reference and self-clinging. And that when you look at your experience, actually when you open out and include others and care for them as well, it is much more fulfilling, as well as fulfilling for them, for heaven's sake. And so then you have this practice of giving and receiving, of Tonglen, where you're focusing, you're training your mind to focus on other rather than self. It's a kind of practical expression of the kind of thing that Shantideva talks about in the Bodhicharya Vitara. And all this works, the more deeply we've really got the fact that the cause of suffering is self-clinging, the more fully we'll be behind the practice. No self-clinging, no suffering. Yeah, there may be some physical pain and so on, but it's the self-clinging that's the issue. Yeah, even if you're, well, going back to Shantideva in the Bodhicharyavatara, you know, he talks about somebody beats you with a stick, you know, you blame them, but actually you brought the body. That's true, but what you really brought was the ego clinging. So the more we get that, the more we actually see that the way out is to open out. Okay, so hopefully we get a sense of, you know, the elements that need to be there. You know, the elements can be there in different ways, and we can make, with all these practices, with the whole Dharma, we have to make it our own. We have to kind of put together a practice that works for who we are. But whatever practice it is, it's going to have an element of refuge there. It's going to have all four noble truths. It's going to have empathy. It's going to have compassion. It's going to have a heart wish that carries over into engaging, that's a resolve to actually do something. And it's going to have methods that we have confidence in that will actually affect our ego clinging, open our hearts, and enable us to benefit the world.